From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. My guest, Neela Butte, a fellow Detroiter like myself, was, I guess it's 11 years ago now since your first film, since In the Company of Men.
And, that's right.
And in the interim, you've done a number of plays and films, Your Friends and Neighbors, Nurse Betty. I met you at the Cannes Film Festival. We're here to talk about your new play, Some Girls. First of all, Neela, thanks for doing the show.
Oh, pleasure. Thank you.
And the thing I want to talk to you about before anything is just in watching the stage shows versus the movies, I'm really struck by how much and how incredibly territorial the work is for you. I mean, it's always about people sort of staking claim on a piece of either literal or figurative territory and marking that. And Some Girls really fits into that, doesn't it?
Very much so. Yeah, I think that it's very much about, you know, one room that shifts, metamorphoses into four different hotel rooms, but very similar, and it becomes a kind of battleground for this male female gender war that's going on.
It's a bit more insidious and less kind of direct than the Men and Ben and some of your other pieces. Certainly less so than the movies. He's a bit more sort of wheedling and cajoling and insidious and not specifically clear.
I think that's probably true. Not as perhaps outright cruel as some of the men have been, but certainly as weak. I think there's a thematic thread of weakness through, you know, a kind of study of weakness in on my part with men, whether it's been in film and somebody else's material and being drawn to that, or just my own work. I think, and then that weakness manifests itself in, you know, that insecurity manifests itself either in anger or, you know, explosiveness or in someone who is more insidious, as you say, and that's certainly the case here, because there's a duality to what's going on stage. There's a dual purpose at play, certainly, that we find out late in the game.
But that cruelty finally comes through in the last 5 minutes of the play, where it's really awful. It's a slap in the face in the way that it's a little shocking, because the force to be safe for so long is really very – makes it a lot more intense and makes everybody think back on what has come before.
Yeah, that's something that I've always been interested in, and that extends all the way through to the curtain call. You know, doing a curtain call where only the man takes a bow and the women, you know, remain and just stare out at the audience. A lot of times, people feel that we're done and we should be able to like drop our guard and have our moment there. But for me, any time that the audience is in the theater, they're mine to play with, manipulate. The music's loud. You know, whatever I want to do and to extend that experience, I feel – so that's part of my interest as well. Like that turn that you talk about is as sharp on the audience as it is on the character that it happens to. So you have to deal with what you're watching and yet feel you've been betrayed as well in a way. That same kind of thing happens, I think, like in The Company of Men. For me, there was that same sort of trick of the audience experiencing it at the same time as the characters, the kind of turnarounds that character that Aaron Eckhart played, Chad, was able to precipitate on them. And I think keeping the audience off guard, you know, I use those techniques even in my writing. You know, at the worst, I write into a corner a lot of times. But at the best, I find a way to set out and write something that surprises me. And I think if it surprises me, in the end, I hope it will surprise an audience.
Well, in this one, and certainly when I saw it before with Eric McCormack, who was a lot more – who attempted to be charming. I mean, there's more of the use of sort of charm in that version. And here he seems to be – more chameleon-like in this version, sort of changing from encounter to encounter. And I wonder where that comes from for you to shift it in that way.
Mark is following down the particular rabbit hole that I'm going down, and that I want that guy to be able to shift dramatically, like the furniture that's you know changing in between scenes. I want that man to kind of go back to being who he was probably with these women, you know, and along the way, we've tried to be very shrewd. You know, the costume designer Lynette Meyer, she's tried to subtly outfit him in probably, and I guess I could say them because the women as well, in things that they probably were wearing around the time that they knew each other, the kinds of look that they had. So there's that sense of when you are renewing a friendship or a relationship with someone you haven't seen in a long time, to try and bring yourself back to that place, that the good that was between them at one point. And he comes along and reopens these wounds. But he had to have been a different guy, not just because he was maturing, but because the women are so different. You know, one is more stern and domineering. The other is just kind of freewheeling. And then there's other versions in between there. So he, I think, reacts to them in different ways, and you want to see that shift. And yet you have to find some through line for him to play. There's something, you know, running, a current running through there that allows him to make a choice or to grow or not grow or whatever it is. But we, again, there's that dual purpose that runs through the show, which retroactively, and even walking out to your car, hopefully, you're still thinking about going, oh, so this is, now I have to rethink everything that this guy has said. That's the problem with someone who's a liar. You know, you realize you're always on, you know, tenuous ground with them. You have to decide how you will take anything they say.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to playwright and screenwriter as well as director Neil Beatt. We're talking about this new version of his play, Some Girls, currently at the Geffen Playhouse. One of the things I noticed about the play, especially in seeing it, this current version as compared to the version I saw before, is that this guy really seems to be a number of your characters in one.
Mm.
You know, I mean, well, generally there are archetypes, and he becomes this kind of archetypal male who shifts from encounter to encounter.
Well, I think often in some of the other plays you might mention or films, there's at least one or two other males who probably shoulder some of that burden.
Yeah.
And since I think ultimately I'm probably harder on men than women, certainly, while getting labeled in various ways, I think I've been consistently tough on men, as men were consistently tough on me when I grew up, you know. So I think that this character, unnamed Guy, we call him, he ends up shouldering that burden of being, you know, various kinds of men, the weakling, the seducer, the aggressor. He has to be all of those men in one manifestation in this play, because the only other characters are these four women that he deals with.
One of the things that fascinates me, too, is about how different – we're talking about the differences between the plays and the movies. What you can do is show how different people are in closed rooms. I mean, when they're in open spaces compared to when they're in a room with a more private setting, there's the side to these men that comes out that we know often that makes them very different kinds of people.
Mm. That enclosure often, you know, brings that out in people, you know, brings out who you really are in a trapped space. You know, I didn't have a... In terms of film, I didn't have a proper education behind the camera. You know, my education came from watching movies, and I did not come up through any of the avenues that we see people coming through of short films or commercials or music videos. So even the films that I've done that have been directing other people's material, if you compare them to other people's films, they're still very still. You know, I'm much more interested what's going on within the frame than moving the frame all the time. And I think that's directly linked to my all the time that I've spent working in the theater in a fixed box and saying, how do you keep that, you know, one thing interesting? And ultimately a less manipulative medium than film. You know, you're constantly directing people where to look in film. I can set up a beautiful, you know, stage frame, as it were, and you can, from your vantage point in your seat, can look at whatever you choose to look at. I can guide you with light or music or this person's talking, but if you choose to look at, you know, just the bedding, you can do it. But in film, you say, you know what, I don't want you to look at the bedding. I want you to look directly into this person's face, and so you cut to a close-up of that person. Someone that I dedicated the play to, actually, Eric Romer, yeah, I wanted to try and get some of the spirit of his moral tales in this piece, and in fact gave out those films to the actors to look at and say, you know, basically, as I have probably in any film or play that I've done, I've said, here are things that are actually better than what we're about to do, but this is what we're shooting for. So let's go for Claire's knee, and if we don't get there, you know, we're still doing good work. And I wanted to have some of that sense of, you know, of searching and longing in the male character, who ultimately is, you know, is chasing one woman while another one comes along and turns his head, and then he's left with this choice, and sometimes he chooses one over the other, and sometimes he just runs away. And so I wanted some of that kind of spirit, you know, that sense of charm and freedom that I see in a lot of his best work. But, you know, I can't help but creep in. And so pretty soon somebody's taping a conversation and things are a little darker than they were meant to be. And off we go. And certainly he was, to me, a mentor in terms of how to be the least manipulative in terms of making films.
Sure. If you're talking about Romero, he could apply it to In the Company of Men, because Romero doesn't move the camera.
Exactly. Doesn't move the camera. He rarely has, you know, source music, a kind of, you know, soundtrack. He likes long takes. He likes actors to be able to set the pace rather than an editor.
And he's also about the weakness of the men, too, the inability to make a decision.
Absolutely. And that ultimately, as misogynistic as a situation may sound, like you look at Le Collectionneuse, you know, that has almost the same sort of setup. Two men and this young woman who appears to be, you know, in danger of being seduced by them, who really is much sharper and smarter and ends up kind of seducing them. So that model was very attractive to me. And so, I certainly learned, I think, a lot of what I favor as a filmmaker as well from a guy like that.
It's The Treatment. My guest is writer-director Neela Butte. His new play, Some Girls, is currently at the Geffen Playhouse. There's always the threat of physical violence that never follows through, but it sounds like this is the first thing you've done where actually there's real violence, or that physical intimidation, because usually it's a kind of bullying that comes from that weakness that we're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah, the men often have a great great bark rather than bite, you know. And even when there is a burst of violence, say like in Nurse Betty, where there's a scalping or there's a shootout at the end, you know, there's almost always a kind of comic quality with that as well. But this, I think, you know, drops its guard here and goes right to the heart of, you know, when you stop being able to talk, you know, that's when the physical violence erupts.
That always fascinates me that there's the threat, but no one is really ever tested. I mean, certainly Nurse Betty, it's bookended by violence, but then that violence disappears and it becomes this sort of cloud cuckoo land love story.
Yeah.
And the violence sort of like reminds us that in its way it is a fairy tale.
Yes. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah, we saw a certain threat of the Wizard of Oz and you know, this kind of wonderful, strange trip that this woman makes to and the love story is basically falling in love with herself, you know, self-actualization of realizing, you know, I don't need a man whether he's real or not. I need to, you know, trust and believe in myself. And off she goes to Europe, you know, to be by herself. You know, that was the first film that I had done that was not from a script that I had written. And a good test of what I believed that I wanted to do as a director was to always be true to the characters and the material, you know, not to try and make that film darker to suit, you know, any of my sensibilities, but to say, I want to take this and not get my handprints all over it, but create something that really works in and of itself. I like the script, so why should I change it to be more like, you know, how I would have written it? I would have never come up with that story. That was just a very clever story written by two first-time writers, and it was a pleasure to take it and make it come to life and not try and, you know, change it in any way.
I can't think of many directors like you who sort of arrived with a style, and what's really changed is your confidence in using color. Because that's what's changed from, if you look at, in The Company of Men, it can almost be black and white.
Yeah, I wanted it to be. In fact, I everything that I looked at on the first cut was all black and white, but we shot it in color because it was cheaper. We found some outdated stock that was color, and I knew somewhere along the line in my head that if in fact it did get into festivals, if it did sell, and a producer heard that it was in color, then, you know, they would no doubt want to try and release it that way. So while we were working on our big 11-day shoot, I was constantly kind of pulling color out of the set so that it would still appear to be almost black and white. And I think that the story was as stark as it felt like it was in black and white. And so I think that, yeah, color has exploded in a certain way for me. I guess that's just, you know, part of the learning curve. You know, you work with really good DPs and you work with, you know, production. Everybody is an artist and that's why I've never been willing to take the moniker of a Neela Butte film or a film by, you know, I've had to petition the DGA to say I don't want that. I'm happy to take credit for what I do, but there are just too many other people, you know, who are artists who work on a picture, and you know, you want them to have the credit of it being a collaborative thing. It's so hugely collaborative. There's so many people involved in making a film come together that it's hard for me to really, you know, marginalize it by saying it's my, you know, it's all mine.
We're going to take a break. I have no fear of credit. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. My guest is writer, director, playwright Neela Butte. More to come after this.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm still taking credit. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. My guest is writer, playwright, director Neil LaBute. But that thing about color we were talking about, I mean, that really has – just thinking about the huge transition between In the Company of Men to Your Friends and Neighbors, and how color becomes as much a part of those environments and as much a statement of those characters. And it also, in a weird way, kind of gives it kind of a two-dimensional feel, almost like painting. And, and I wondered how big a consideration it was for you in that.
It was certainly something that I was interested in exploring. I felt that there was certainly more money involved. There was a new not class of person. It was just a new environment for me. I came from the Midwest where I'd shot In the Company of Men and landed in Los Angeles with a film under my arm that some people had seen and ready to make another one. And so I was working with a new production designer, a new DP, a new costume designer, and the idea of starting to saturate these things with color, but still in a stark way. I think you're right about the two-dimensionality of it. And that, I think, figured into the story itself. There was a scene that came in various ways to characters, all looking at a painting that we didn't see in a gallery. And I liked the idea of those tableaus, being colorful but still very fixed. And it also became a slightly experimental film in the sense of there were things that I set out for myself I didn't want to do. That I didn't want to have any establishing shots. I didn't want to have any cutaways to phones or anything that was an insert.
It's almost all masters of movie.
It is, and except when you go to a close up, you wanted it to mean something. There's very few moves of the camera in the picture, but when there are, hopefully they're doing something interesting that ties different clusters of people together. I've probably got three moves in The Company of Men, and I wish I could take them out. I wish the film was entirely still, but I ended up using a couple of moves.
But those moves you use basically use the camera as a spear in that case. In those cases,
yes.
You're really moving in to make a point.
Yeah. But it was it's still I think that I'd rather move the actor in retrospect closer to the camera.
Really?
Yeah. I would rather have them. Keep coming at us rather than us coming at them. To remove the sense, the reminder that, you're watching a movie, to let them, really, for me, that the idea that people can't get out of that frame and you can't stop watching it, for me, the best manifestation of that kind of thing is when, say, Aaron Eckhart and Stacey Edwards are sitting on the bed and he finally exposes himself as what he's been up to. It's like Aaron gives a 5-minute workshop in the male psyche. He goes from trying to keep up his guard to shifting position to finally, breaking down and laughing and then walking out. It's like, it's like everything that a guy would try in any traditional breakup is kind of placed into that five minute scene. And Aaron was fantastic, in being able to play all of that.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to Neil LaBute, whose new play, Some Girls, is at the Geffen Playhouse. I guess we're talking about this. I think about possession, which is by no means you, but rather than it being about one person's weakness and that the way that person infects everybody else, there's weakness in everyone in possession. And I wonder if that felt to you like such a kind of 180 from what you were doing, that that's why you were attracted to it.
What was interesting to me thematically in that piece, and when you have a novel of that size, you're going to lose so much of it that you have to streamline it in some way. I think what I started to center on was the interesting dichotomy of the people in the present day who are free to do whatever they want to do, are so worried about the mistakes they've made. They've because they could do anything, they've constantly made mistakes and had bad relationships, and so they come into this moment where they could fall in love, and they're completely frightened of the fact, and don't want to find another person, and worried only that they'll have heartache. Whereas this era, this Victorian era that we've been taught to believe is so was so upright and proper, and to find these two characters who kind of threw everything aside and said, as messy as love can be, it's worth it. And that lesson is learned by the people in the present, that they ultimately were less weak and less afraid of the idea of love. That was an interesting element of that story to me, and also the chance to do something in period. I'd come off of working on Nurse Betty with Jean-Yves Escoffier, a fantastic French DP who became a really good friend. And really I found somebody who just, you know, saw movies in pictures the way that I see them in words, you know. So he really kind of in some Jerry Maguire-ish completing me way, you know, he had me at 1,000 feet, you know. He was, you know, just a great guy, and he passed away a few years ago. But he was someone who hadn't really worked in period films either, so I knew that he would give it a look.
And actually,
that was
really
different.
Contemporary films that moved a lot.
Yes.
So when he came to work with you, you gave him the opposite of that.
Yeah, the films that he'd done with Leo, you know,
Louis Carax.
Yeah, absolutely. He, you know, the camera is flying, you know, and jumping into the sand and crazy stuff. So it was, I brought him down a little, I calmed him down and he sped me up, and I think things, you know, clicked pretty well together. But to watch him sort of paint, you know, with light in a really beautiful way, he was a fantastic man and a great DP, but showed me again a great deal about color and, you know, and movement. And so I have had luck in that way working. I just worked with, Rohir Stelford who had done, Disturbia recently, so I've had good luck with cinematographers who you know just really are collaborative, but have such great vision that it's, you know, it allows you to work and make the frame feel bigger than perhaps, you know, you normally would.
It's the treatment, I guess, as writer and director of the stage and screen. I almost never say that on this show, Anil Abiut. I start the show by talking about that territorial thing. There are two things that have always struck me about your work, and we'll save the Mormon and misogyny for the next show. But it's the pieces are almost always about, like I said, territorial imperative and somebody moving to conquer and somebody who's sort of too passive to fight back, but also fear. Mm. I mean, you talked about making a monster movie, but in fact, there's always been the specter of fear in everything you've done.
Two things. Read a lot of Pinter. And grew up in a small house with a scary dad who was very difficult and also erratic, you know, may have been bipolar, who knows, would never think of, you know, going to see a doctor or anything to find out, you know, if that was the case, that, oh, this simple pill will change my life. You know, that really was never an option. I think with a generation, you know, before mine, that, you know, that was not acceptable, you know, anything to do with mental illness was, you know, something to keep behind closed doors. That said, he also was a truck driver, and so he was gone, you know, for great periods and then would come home. So you never knew when he would be around or what mood he would come through the door in. So, you know, it was constantly like, you know, someone coming in the third act and changing the dynamics of, so you can see a lot of that in my work, that there's a lot of shifting of perspective and the power dynamic has changed. Everything you thought was okay before now has been, you know, been a game. You know, this I'm the equivalent of someone saying, you know, I had a bad teacher, so I can't wait to grow up and be a teacher so I can be mean to the students as well. You know, I'm saying, you know, I'm gonna put an audience through the same you know, thing that I went through when I was a kid.
The one thing that also you can sort of find in all the work too is that there is no kind of what we think of as a modern acknowledgement of neurosis.
Mm.
You know, I mean, that sort of thing, where there's that awareness that somebody is damaged.
Right.
Which, I'm from the Midwest, too. People don't think like that. There's nothing wrong with me. I can go out and go to work every day. And then that way, being like a functioning, damaged person.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of the stuff that you do, too, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, people find an acceptable mode for that. They'll get physically sick because that's acceptable. You know, I'll stay home. I'll take my sick days. I actually don't feel well. Something seems like it's wrong with me. I can't say that. I'm not going to take my insurance and use those mental health days. I'm going to just use my sick days and try and get over it, because people won't understand. You know, it's the notion that as long as everything looks okay and the grass is cut and the car's out front and, you know, and you keep, you know, the litter off your lawn, everything's okay. You know, everything goes behind closed doors. And not a smart way to live, but it was kind of the way in which people did live, you know, 30 years ago. It was, you know, as long as the neighborhood looks okay, then it must be okay.
That's a weird thing, too, because that's a way that your pieces don't quite seem modern, you know, and that lack of acknowledgement that there's something wrong with me. Just people going ahead and doing damage. And that fear we're talking about, where nobody else can say it, this person can't acknowledge it himself,
right,
then why is it up to us to bring it up?
Yeah, and it's the same for an audience. And an audience will sit there and you know, and work in this silent partnership of they have all this stuff dumped in their lap, and they sort of have to sort through it themselves. I often, you know, don't end things where an audience would hope for it to end, but even I end things abruptly, or, you know, with a great deal of sound, don't have a curtain call, you know, or change the curtain call, and just sort of like drive them out of the theater at the end. For me, I didn't conclude that, and should, you know, so that people will still, you know, spend some time around me, that that is not the only, you know, reason that I do the work I do. I am interested in the theatrical experience. You know, what is it that an audience is placed in this position of relative strength and security in a theater? And that doesn't always need to be the case. You know, there are ways in which the experience, I think, can be more vital, that it can be, you know, it rather than just something that you watch, it's actually more interactive. It's more combative in a way. And I think in some ways more alive when you ask them to do more than just watch, you know.
Finally, it's that Pinter thing about shocking, isn't it? I mean, because you talked about Pinter at some point in all those pieces, that he does something that totally catches people off guard.
Yeah, and I think so do people. You know, it's like I write from the imagination primarily. You know, I'm sure pieces of me, now that I've revealed in the last 30 minutes, you know, have filtered into the work. But I'm not someone who really, you know, and probably just because I look at my life and people around me and go, you know, me and none of you are interesting enough to write a play about. However, you know, I'm not taking their lives and renaming the characters. Or am I going through the newspaper looking for, oh, that's a really big tragedy, I should try and use that in some way. Most things have sprung from the imagination. And I think with that, you know, it comes this sense of I'm an amateur at what I do. You know, when go open the newspaper, look at what people really are capable of doing, and that's what's shocking. You know, it's not anything that I can write is dwarfed by what people do in Alabama and Darfur and you know, Czechoslovakia. It's amazing what people are actually capable of. So I feel like I'm someone who's just writing, you know, little stories, and if they spook you a little and they make you think about them for a minute in this very disposable society, then fantastic. But the things that really, I think, keep you awake at night are the things that you see on television and in the news.
And as the bell peals with optimism, we're out of time. I can only ask, I'd love it if you came back sometime.
I would be happy to be here.
My guest is writer-director Neil Labute. It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Our technical director at NPR West is Don Spaulding. The editor is Bob Carlson. Gemma Dempsey produces the program. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.